Halloween!
How many E's are in that? Be honest. A dozen?
About seven.
Yeah, a lot of E's. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's true. It is the Halloween edition of our show. Thank you for being here. We just spoke with Rich Coes, a.k.a. Svengoolie. And we were talking about, I'm interested in the psychology of the things that scare you and how things can scare you when you're a kid, and then years and years and years and years later, you remember them, especially something that you see in a movie or a television show or read in a book. It's just, it's there forever. It's never going to go away. And we kind of like it, but we're kind of repelled by it at the exact same time.
I don't really like it. I like to have good, happy memories.
Sure. But has there ever been a time where you've been watching a movie or a television show? Because I know what a fan you are of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So there must be something about it where you go, I'm scared, but this is good.
I don't know how to describe it. I'm scared for different reasons than like a horror movie would scare me.
Mm-hmm.
But you do start thinking about, okay, I don't really think this is ever going to happen where there's some virus where people turn
sure.
into zombies and
right.
they try and kill us. And then we're all left to fight it out and try and conquer the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you really start thinking about it, that's frightening to me is the people part of it.
Right.
Because, you
what
know.
What we become when
yeah.
we need to. Yeah.
And it's when we need to, because, you know, there are people who say, who's worse? You know, Rick's a good guy if you watch The Walking Dead, and Negan's a bad guy. But in Negan's head, is he a bad guy?
No.
He's They're taking care of his people.
Right, 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 right.
So that's what's frightening to me is the human race. Seriously.
No, it is. It is. Jay Bonansinga is the guy who writes the novelizations of the Walking Dead stories. So when I was doing the night show, we had him on a couple of times. He's from Evanston. And I said, go back to me to the first time you... And it was essentially what we just talked about with Rich Coes, Svengoolie downstairs. What was it as a kid that you saw in a movie that not only scared you, but went, at some point, I wouldn't mind doing this for a living, you know? And he said there was something about the witch in Snow White. He goes, I just couldn't deal with how scary the witch was in Snow White. Isn't that something that a guy who years and years later would scare countless people with Walking Dead stories would be so disturbed by that? And even as he was telling me, you could see it was still bothering him. Like that witch was so mean to Snow White. She just wanted to live with all those little fellows in the forest, but this witch wouldn't have it.
But look at Svengoolie. It was the witch and the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
The flying monkeys were scarier to me.
So scary. So scary.
And I don't know. Is that a boy's worst fear? Is to
witch?
Have a woman be so terribly mean to him and demeaning?
Boy, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Because girls are like, they have a different relationship with their mom, and they fight with their mom a lot,
yeah.
as I did as a teenager. And you're like, moms are just meant to be mean.
Well, Disney had a way of having the quote-unquote evil stepmother. They like the evil stepmother. And the queen, or the witch, is essentially, that's her stepmother. You know,
right?
And you had the stepmother in Cinderella.
But that's
a lot
so
of evil stepmothers.
So sad for stepmothers out there everywhere, because
right.
there are a lot of them.
I know. I
and
know.
I'm sure that was in the head of a kid when their father was remarrying, going
yeah.
the evil stepmother.
Yeah, yeah, that must play in. If I had to rank the monsters that I thought were the scariest, it's always going to be vampires or Dracula. That was the one that was so unsettling to me. I still remember, I must have been 5 or 6, there's a movie called Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, and it was one of the Christopher Lee Dracula movies.
And you saw it when you were 5 or 6.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any supervision in the house growing up?
None that I'm aware of. No, they actually, like, they went out of their way to expose me to this, and I'm glad they
yeah,
did.
And it worked out great
it
for you.
It worked out so well
it
for
did.
Me. But throughout the summer, from the time I was a very little kid until I was in 6th grade or 7th grade, is every Sunday we would go to the drive-in. A lot of times you got 1 or 2 horror movies as part of your 3-movie package. So Dracula Has Risen from the Grave was such a scary movie. And there was one scene in particular where there was a priest, although I don't think they called him a priest. I don't remember if he was just called a minister or whatever he was referred to as in the movie. And he's walking through the grounds of his church, And the bell is, it's the middle of the day, but the bell is ringing and it's not supposed to be ringing. And he goes to investigate and he's looking at it and it's ringing, but it's ringing strangely. It's not the regular ring. And then there's just a slow trickle of blood that comes down the rope. So he goes upstairs to investigate and he sees that an altar boy has been killed up by the bell.
Oh, jeez.
And I remember just in my head thinking to myself, well, this isn't good for anybody. It's not good for the dead kid. It's not good for the priest. No one's going to win in this situation. We later find out, of course, that Dracula is back and he's very upset about things. But it was the formulation in my head of what was to come, you know, because you're piecing it together. Well, how did that kid just didn't slip on a bell? That doesn't happen. What led to this? And then I knew by the title Dracula was going to be responsible somehow.
Yeah.
But spoiler alert, it made for great storytelling, both in my head and the way it played out. And then I remember just loving being scared. That was one of the first times. But every time we'd see a movie that scared me, I was so moved by it, so afraid by it. But I loved it. I still do.
I actually have to look up some things because I'm thinking 1969, I was 6 years old. Is this about the time you saw it, or 1970, would you say?
Probably a year or two earlier. I will tell you, the movie came out in 1968. So, yeah, we're off by a year. I was 5 years old when I saw this.
Okay, because I have to even think back, and I don't know if it's because girls didn't watch scary movies as much as guys did, because I felt silly that I didn't have an answer when you said, what's the first time you ever scared on the screen?
Right.
So I need to look up some of the movies that came out in 1969 just to refresh my memory to see if I even saw them.
Well, the one I referenced the other day, Rosemary's Baby, which I think is just one of the best scary movies
that?
Of all time. That had to be right around then, too. I bet 1969 or 1970 probably for Rosemary's Baby.
Okay, because that one really scared me because I believed that to be true.
But you probably didn't see that in its initial run because it was rated R, and parents, especially with this one, were really careful because it was so disturbing. I know I wanted to see that one, and my parents just wouldn't. There's no way they would have taken me. I didn't see that one until I was a teenager.
And I saw it on TV. I mean, was it released in the theater?
They cut a little bit out. Yeah, Rosemary's Baby was in theaters.
Right, I never saw that. I never saw any scary movie in a theater till I was
no?
a teenager. Probably not.
It was almost scarier to see this kind of movie in a theater because, you know, you'd always look behind you to see who was around, and you'd see somebody, and you go, that guy's just scary on his own, and I'm in a scary movie with that. Look at that guy back there. That guy could take us all out in a minute. Look at that guy.
I guess my first introduction to scary things would have been on Night Gallery.
A ton of scary episodes on Night Gallery.
And, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock Presents I watched when I was not obviously in its original run. And then I was probably older by the time I won it. But Night Gallery came out. My brother and sister are a little older than me.
Yeah.
Actually,
a lot older.
And they would watch it on Friday or Saturday nights when it was on.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then you had one TV in your house.
Night Gallery was on Wednesdays.
It was on a weekday?
Yeah, Night Gallery is Wednesday night at 9 on Channel 5.
Well, you'll be right on that. I'm just saying when it was on in its original first run,
yeah.
We would all gather as a family and watch it.
It was very scary.
And I think that was my first exposure to creepy things. Not the pop-out kind of scary, but things that, like, they disturb you.
Yeah.
That's probably my first time I ever was scared was during episodes of Night Gallery, and I don't know that I can remember specifics.
The episode of Night Gallery that put me away, just absolutely scared me for a long, long time, was called The Surprise, and that's with John Carradine and Vince Van Patten. Do you remember this one?
I don't know.
All right, so Vince Van Patten and his two friends are always ripping on this old guy who lives in their town. They're always making fun of this old guy who lives in their town, John Carradine, who used to be in tons of scary movies and westerns. He was always in both. So one day they decide to go to the house, John Carradine's house, and I don't remember what the reason was, but John Carradine says to them, hey, if you guys are up to it, there's a surprise buried in the field that I buried a long, long time ago, a great surprise, and if you guys want to dig it up, it's yours. So they're like, yeah, why wouldn't we want to do that?
I would never fall for
that.
So
he tells them, right.
Would you?
It sounds a little suspect,
yeah.
Doesn't it? He tells him where it is. I think he gives him a map. I can't remember why. I seem to remember them having a map. So the three of them are digging and digging and digging, and after a while, one of the three boys goes, he's just messing with us. We mess with him. He's messing with us. There's nothing. And he leaves. The two of them are digging and digging, and it's getting darker and darker, and one of the guys goes, I got to go home. I can't do this anymore. If there is something, it's yours, because I can't do it anymore. Vince Van Patten is determined, right? He's digging. He's about to give up, and at the last second, he hits something. He doesn't know what it is, but there's a box, good-sized box down there. So he's moving the dirt away and moving the dirt away, and he's still not able to open it, and he just keeps doing it with his shovel and with his hands. And at this point, it's really late at night. It's really dark and late at night.
No flashlights or
anything.
No
flashlights. So he finally gets to the end. He lifts up the top of the box, and as he lifts it up, it's John Carradine laying inside there, and he just goes, surprise, and he pulls him in, and that's the end of the episode.
Oh, my God.
It terrified me like mad. I couldn't believe how scary that was. It was just so frightening and so well done, the way it was done. Just perfect.
There's another movie that really scared me, and the first, I bet it came out around that time, the original Blob.
Oh, yeah. That's Steve McQueen. That was a little earlier.
All right. Well, that's
Steve
one of the...
Steve McQueen, and I believe the woman who was Helen Crump on Mayberry, on The Andy Griffith Show. Anita
who was
Corso.
Not in porn.
No, she was not in porn.
Everybody says that, and not that's not true.
Porn didn't really exist much back then.
Well, you couldn't find it anywhere, but it existed.
There were what they called stag films, but there were—I mean, it did not star Anita Corsett. It was not the lady from Andy Griffith's show.
But that again,
the Blob was scary.
My brother and sister would watch these things and creature features.
Yeah. What about Trilogy of Terror?
Yes,
you saw that, right?
Yes,
that's the Karen Black.
Yes.
That,
but I saw that later.
That's really scary.
I saw that in high school.
That's really scary. Did you see? All right, so this would have also been when you were
in high school. The Blob didn't scare you?
A little bit.
It really scared me.
Why? What was it about it?
Because this thing could just come and get you, not unlike Stranger Things, where it would just envelop you and take you, and then you'd see the Blob moving down the street, and you'd see people's heads and eyes in there. It was really horrific.
And the Blob was like, remember the toy slime that came out? It was like a big giant ball of slime.
The special effects weren't that fantastic.
No, they were bad at the time. And then as we got older and special effects progressed, you'd watch it and you'd go, oh,
that's
just
a joke.
Not good.
It's Jell-O that someone bubbled up.
It's just Jell-O.
But that scared me. And again, I go back to the Night of the Living Dead. It's these slow-moving things that scare me because that's more terror when it's coming so slowly, like you're anticipating it.
But that's good for suspense. But I'd reason in my head. I'd go, if the mummy was after me, I would just outrun the mummy. There's no way the mummy...
Yeah, but what if you fell? And unfortunately, all the women fell. It was never a guy.
No.
It was always as they were trying to run in high heels and they trip in a divot somewhere.
Right. There's always... And in real life, I don't know how many times you've run in your life, but you probably run 20,000 times for whatever reason in your life and never fallen once. But in every horror movie you go, there's going to be a vine, somebody's going to trip on a vine. They don't stand a chance.
Trilogy of Terror was scary, and there was something else.
Salem's Lot. Did you see that on TV?
No.
That was really scary, too. That was a Stephen King story. So in the movie, people in this town in Salem's Lot keep dying very mysteriously and then coming back. And there's this little boy, Danny Glick is his name, and he comes to his friend's window and he's tapping on the window and he's floating above the window and he's just trying to convince his friend to let him in. And I'm watching this with my brother and we're both screaming, "Do not let him in." We're screaming so loud. You know how you always hear about screen talkers in movies? I hate those people, but I'm telling you, my brother and I are going, please, for the love of all that is good, do not let Danny Glick into your bedroom. This will not be good for anybody.
Listen, if a friend, I don't care how good of a friend, if a friend's floating up near your window, you can't let it go.
You have to let it go at some point. All right. We will continue this discussion and talk about other things. If you want to jump in, you know how to do it, right? It's 312-981-72. No. Do not call that number because then you'll be on with Steve during the business lunch. 312-235-2525. That might be your better option. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. Judy Pilak has come in, and she's wearing a crazy saucy outfit. We'll tell you what it is next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Judy. We really appreciate that.
Absolutely. It's my job.
It is your job.
Yeah.
And you do it well.
Thank you.
She has to leave, though. I don't have to, but there's a party going on next door.
Wait, there's a party going on in here, Judy.
Ooh. I got your party right here, Jude. Yeah.
All right, go, enjoy the party.
Thank you. See you there.
Send them our love.
Because I know Wendy's hungry.
We're not allowed in because we're not dressed in costumes.
You know what? We can't partake in fun. I've got another hard hat you could wear.
What's that?
Put your hoodie up and just walk in like you're
an apprentice of
Judy's. Chance the Rapper or something.
Really? That's all it takes to be Chance the Rapper?
I was actually thinking of the other rapper, and I couldn't think of his name. My favorite rapper, from Detroit.
Yeah,
Eminem.
Eminem.
Yeah,
I love Eminem.
I'll be Peanut Eminem.
Perfect. And you have to be brown. Little then. You both have hoodies on. I'm just trying to.
No,
work
Peanut Eminem
it out
is
somehow.
Bigger than regular Eminem.
I guess.
He's a little thicker.
When I think peanut, it means like
oh,
tiny.
Yeah.
But not when it comes to M&Ms.
Right. No.
All right, I got to go. Bye.
Enjoy yourself, Jude. All right, we were talking about, because it's Halloween, what scares you and how for some reason it just stays with you. If something scares you, it doesn't just scare you at that moment. It just stays in your brain, could be for the rest of your life.
And you think back about it,
oh,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden the memories jog.
Yeah, it's haunting. Julie is on the line. She has a movie that scared her and is going to tell us about it. What's the movie?
It Follows.
Oh, from a few years ago.
Yes, it has stayed in my brain. And I have actually tried to figure out ways, like if this really happened to me, how would I outsmart this demon that would just literally follow you? Not fast. Didn't have it wasn't magical. It just would follow you. And I'm like, would I be like an over-the-road truck driver and drive across the country and confuse it? It stayed with me for months upon months.
Now, were you thinking that during the movie?
Can you explain the premise of it, basically, without...
Well, yes. Well, of course, it always starts off with... You get attacked by this demon. A demon attaches you if you have sex with someone that already attached, this demon is attached to. So the only way to get rid of this demon is to give it to somebody else, like through sex. So it's like a bad STI, it's one of those things. And so you're going, oh my God, so you had your first choice is like, I got to get rid of this thing really quick. But if the demon then kills that person, it goes back to you. It goes back to the person it had the last time.
Oh, that's not
so
fair.
Never,
no.
Exactly. So it's like a catch.
Do you think, Julie, that this is what Will Chamberlain had that made him sleep with all those women? Do you think that could be his problem?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure in the back of his mind, I got to get rid of it.
Right.
And so, I just kept thinking, what if, you go someplace across the country or maybe to Europe and have a lot of sex and then you're free for a while.
But demons, demons don't know any boundaries, though. If you went to Europe or wherever you went, the demon, they have carte blanche. They can go wherever they want.
But I swear it literally just, it seems like it just walks.
Oh.
Somehow it can't magically appear. It just somehow hooks up to the car. I have no idea. It wherever you go, it takes a normal speed amount. Yeah, it just follows you.
Yeah.
It's not magical in that way, but it can kill you. So it was just bizarre. And I just want to say right now, happy Halloween, and I love this bonus hour you guys have. It
thank
just
you, Julie.
Makes my day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Can I say one more thing?
I think so, yeah.
I want to say I hate my parents because the scariest they did to me was I was 6 years old in a drive-in watching The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
that'll do
thank
it.
Thank you, parents.
That was nice of them. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you. We appreciate it. And we were talking about scary things for Halloween because, in a way, you got your choice. You can do scary things or you can do good things. And now can we do good things?
Yeah,
can we do
sure.
the yin and yang of Halloween?
Yes.
I heard about this institution, this organization, this beautiful thing that's going on called the Magic Wheelchair. And we have the development director, Christine Getman. Is that your name, Christine?
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Hi, Christine.
Christine, we heard about this. We have seen pictures of the Magic Wheelchair. And could you please explain the wonderful things that you do for people?
Yes. So simply put, we build epic costumes for kids in wheelchairs nationwide.
And this is seriously epic. You can go to magicwheelchair.org. Is it a TIE fighter? Is that the one that has Darth Vader in it? That one's amazing from, I think, last year or 2 years ago.
We recently did a Star Destroyer. We've got several different Star Wars ships. We did a Predator this last weekend. I don't know if you guys have seen that yet, but
no, that sounds great.
80s fans are loving it. You should check it out.
And you think about it, you know, you take your kids trick-or-treating, and if you have a child with special needs who's in a wheelchair, it's like all of a sudden, what do you do? These costumes are so amazing, you do not see the wheelchair anymore.
Correct. That is why we do what we do. Our founder, Ryan Weimer, has kiddos in wheelchairs. And he started dressing them up for Halloween, including their wheelchair. The community accepted them and treated them like stars for a change rather than something different or weird. That was the premise of Magic Wheelchair, and we just want to share it with the world now.
And how long ago did this start?
He started building almost 10 years ago, a little less than that. But we started Magic Wheelchair 3 years ago.
And people who are listening today who might have a kid that's in a wheelchair or you know someone, how can people get involved? Can people donate money? Can people donate their time or their artistic talents to help with this?
Yeah, all of the above. If you'd like to volunteer, go to our website and there's a volunteer tab where you can submit an application to build or to help us out in other ways. If you have a child with a disability or you know someone, you can go to the apply section right on top and submit an application, and we will try our best to build for every child who has submitted a request. And beyond that, if you just love Halloween or love Comic-Con and love what we do, please donate, because every build we fund the materials for, and then we have volunteer builders nationwide who complete the costumes.
That's spectacular. I'm guessing, Christine, it's probably too late for a child for this Halloween because it's today. But it's never too late to start planning for next year, right?
Absolutely. And we build year-round. It's not just about Halloween. Obviously, this is like Christmas for us today. But we do cosplay costumes for the Comic-Cons year-round as well.
What a fantastic idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, really. And I just heard about it this year from a friend of mine, Dina. And she said these would make a great guest on the air because there are a lot of people who could use these services or donate their time for this. The Magic Wheelchair, it's just magicwheelchair.org. You're also on Twitter and social media. I'm curious, you mentioned the founders of Magic Wheelchair was Ryan Weimer, is it?
Yes.
What was his very first costume? Because I'm wondering how far he's come from that very first time to what the elaborate plans are now.
His very first was a pirate ship for his son, Keaton. And since then has grown. This year, he's working on a costume for him that Keaton drew himself. So he's literally bringing his imagination to life. It's really amazing.
That's such a great thing. I mean, I can't imagine it. How excited a kid must be to all of a sudden have that dream come true right before his very eyes and be the star of Halloween. That's such a nice gesture.
We love it. Definitely keep an eye on our Facebook and Instagram today. We're revealing 40 costumes for Halloween, so there will be a lot of new photos to check out.
There was someone who was just on TV. I was telling Wendy this yesterday. He is in a wheelchair. This boy is in a wheelchair, and he was the Wheel of Fortune board. Was that you guys, or was that something he just did on his own?
No, I think that was just on his own, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah, he looked great. It was an operational Wheel of Fortune board.
Oh, my gosh, I love that. People are so creative. It's amazing.
You know, I was just whining about how I don't like dressing up for Halloween because I'm an adult, but boy, did I have fun dressing my kids up.
Sure.
And coming up with costumes.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. So magicwheelchair.org. Please, listeners, go check it out. You will smile. You will be amazed at these amazing costumes that incorporate the wheelchair. Magic Wheelchair on Twitter, Facebook. You're everywhere, aren't you?
We are. Yeah. I love what we do.
Christine Getman, Development Director for magicwheelchair.org. Thank you so much for your time and good luck. And hopefully people will get a jump on this for next year.
Yeah, thank you so much, and happy Halloween.
Right back at you. It
very,
is such
very
a nice thing.
Yeah, no question about it.
And I had never heard of this before.
No, you showed me some pictures yesterday. I love them. The pictures are great.
And the Wheel of Fortune kid, how great would it be if he could actually get the real Vanna White or Pat Sajak to pose with him?
Yeah, that'd be fun. I have found this, Wendy, speaking of trick-or-treating. These are things, this is according to MSN, things you never knew about trick-or-treating. You thought you know everything about it. Forget about it. Here's all new things. First of all, the tradition goes back 2,000 years. The first trick-or-treating took place 2,000 years ago.
Ugga, ugga.
It was cavemen dressed just as other cavemen.
Are you going to eat that rabbit?
Right. That's an actual audio from the first Halloween. The tradition started with food and wine. The roots of trick-or-treating go back, as we said, more than 2,000 years to the ancient Celts or Celts. They celebrated a pagan festival called Samhain on November the 1st that marked the end of the harvest season. The night before, they believed that the dead returned as ghosts, so they left food and wine on the doorsteps to appease the ghosts. I always wonder if ghosts like the red or the white. I think
white, because a ghost is white.
Yeah.
And then if they spill, you don't see it on there.
That would ruin the ghost? Yeah, it would.
Can't get red wine out.
The night before October 31st came to be known as All Hallows Eve, and that, of course, became Halloween.
See, now, I did mention that in our neighborhood, and I don't do it anymore, although it still happens, the trick-or-drinking, I don't know if that's what they technically call it, but you bring your kids mm-hmm. where they're not quite old enough to go on their own yet, and the mm-hmm. parents would kind of pull a wagon and, you know, be there, and when the kids go up and get candy, the adults would get a beverage
right.
from the people who live
something
there.
Something for everybody.
Oh, it was really fun.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll offer to take some other kid trick-or-treating tonight.
Do that. That's not strange at all. You should definitely do that. There was a time where trick-or-treaters used to sing and dance in exchange for their sweets.
Hence, do a trick, you'll get a treat.
Yeah, yeah. Back in the day, a phrase that I hate, but it says it here on MSN, so I'm forced to say it against my will. Revelers couldn't just show up on a doorstep and demand candy. They had to entertain for it. Now, I always thought that 364 days out of the year, you're told by your parents, you don't just go up to strangers and ask for candy. That's not going to play out. It's rude, plus they could poison you. But on Halloween, it's encouraged. I have no idea how that comes to be, but it does. In Middle Ages, in Britain, kids who were mostly poor went door-to-door dressed in disguise on All Hallows Eve. They would have to sing and dance and tell jokes. Some would recite poetry. What if a kid came to your door right now and he did a sonnet? How would that meet? What would you do to him?
I'd give him extra candy.
You'd whip candy at him.
Probably.
You want candy? Take this.
Or I'd just close the door like I did to carolers. After the first song, it's like, that's beautiful.
Right.
And then they started the second song, just close the door because I didn't know what else to do.
Enough with the poetry, Robert Frost. I'm trying to watch TV. They would tell jokes. They would recite poetry. All this in exchange for food and money.
That's sad.
Irish and Scottish immigrants revived this tradition in the 19th century in America, turning it into a more or less of the trick-or-treating that we know today. So thank you, Irish and Scottish people, for doing this. Americans spend, look at the size of this number. How much do you think Americans spend on Halloween candy every year?
$9 billion.
$3.8 billion.
Billion?
Billion, with an N.
I should have bought more.
Right. No, I didn't mean per person.
Oh, okay.
This is collectively. This is the entire country, not per person. That'd be way too much. The most popular candy, it turns out, this can't be right. Candy corn? That's not the most popular.
And you don't give that away for Halloween. That's just for fake decoration.
That's for the whole season, right?
Yeah, and if you don't like candy corn, if I may, mix it with salted peanuts.
That adds a little flavor to it.
It's like it tastes exactly like a payday bar.
Oh, yeah, I guess it would.
And it looks really pretty in your candy dish.
Now, do you do this with the candy corn? Because I've always done this, and I know it's stupid, but I do it anyway.
Yes.
It's a three-party.
Yes, I do.
You eat the white tip, then you eat the orange center, then you eat the yellow edge. They all taste exactly the same, but somehow you've convinced your brain that you're eating three separate flavors of candy, but we all know better.
Yeah, I do that for like the first four or five, and then I just grab them by the handful.
Then you just start eating them in bulk. The reports of poison candy are greatly exaggerated. We've heard stories forever about people putting razor blades in candy and stuff like that. Turns out, no, it says fact. No child has ever been randomly poisoned by a stranger on Halloween.
Yet.
At least in recorded history. Are you out to change the stat?
No, but I don't trust people nowadays. I'm serious. There are people that, you know, their parents voted for Donald Trump or, their parents voted for Hillary. Let's put X-Lax in their baby Ruth. That is a bad combination, I guess.
That was their worst baby Ruth flavor variation of all time. The X-Lax flavored baby Ruth. They didn't sell at all. It says there are, however, two cases of Halloween poisonings that may have led to the lore. Back in 1974, an 8-year-old boy in Houston, Texas, died after eating a pixie stick laced with cyanide.
Oh, my God.
His father, who had recently taken out a hefty life insurance policy on both his son and daughter, was later convicted of his son's murder. Oh, that's gruesome.
So it wasn't some stranger. It was from your parent.
Yeah. Don't trust your dad with pixie sticks. My dad calls me every couple of days. I got more pixie sticks. Are you out of pixie stick? No, Dad. I have plenty. In 1970, a 5-year-old Detroit boy died after ingesting a large amount of heroin. The drug was found sprinkled on his candy haul, but it was later discovered that the family put it there to throw off investigators. What's with people's dads and moms killing their own kids for Halloween? In reality, the boy uncovered his uncle's heroin stash and mistakenly ate it, tragically dying of the overdose.
Oh, my God.
That's a fun story to tell around the campfire.
The two times it's happened, it was from their parents.
Their families did it to them. Yeah. Ugh.
That is really putting a damper on my
Halloween.
That's
ruining Halloween.
Thanks,
Bill. That is ruining Halloween. It says here, Wendy, I don't know if this is true or not, but it says it on the internet, so I'm guessing it is. Daylight savings time was extended in part to help trick-or-treaters.
Right.
Back in 1985, when Congress was debating extending daylight saving time, it says savings time here, but it's saving time. For energy conservation, the candy industry lobbied hard in its favor. They wanted the clocks to fall back after Halloween so the trick-or-treaters could collect an hour's worth more of candy that would translate into more sales of candy.
But it didn't happen till recently.
It says here, the bill was passed in 2005, but it started in 2007, so fairly recently.
Okay, because in 1997... when I got married, the night of our wedding, October 25th, at that point that year, we got to extend, the clocks turned back at 2, and the party was still going, and we did get charged for
an
extra hour.
You did?
Well, yeah, because we stayed
an extra hour.
But that would have been a great idea. Like, it's only 2 o'clock. We have this place till 3.
Right.
But yes, so every year on our anniversary, we'd get an extra hour of fun or sleep or whatever.
Yeah. You know why I think that's unfair? When I did the overnight show here, on 2 different times when it shifted, I had to work an extra hour, but I didn't get paid for an extra hour.
You need a union.
I got to talk to the union. I do have to talk to the union.
And then I noticed that all of a sudden it wasn't our anniversary weekend that the clocks were turned back. It was that first...
Right.
Because it's happening this weekend coming up after Halloween has already happened.
Yeah.
This coming Sunday.
Saturday into Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Which means I'm going to be late for everything on Sunday.
for a whole day. Jack-o'-lanterns weren't usually, or I shouldn't say usually, they weren't originally made from pumpkins. They were made from what?
Gourds.
Mm-mm. Turnips. That's not scary. It sounds like I made that up. I didn't, though. In Irish folklore, a drunkard named Jack made a deal with...
O'-lantern.
Jack-o'-lantern. Right, an Irishman. Jack-o'-lantern made a deal with the devil.
Of course he did.
So that he would never have to go to hell. But as Jack found out when he died, that didn't mean he was getting into heaven either. So Jack roamed the earth with coal in a turnip, thus becoming... Who believes this? Thus becoming...
You're selling it, though. I gotta tell you.
Jack of the lantern. The Irish turned carved turnips and potatoes and beets into lanterns in hopes of keeping Jack away. In the U.S., pumpkins were plentiful and they were bigger, becoming the go-to for jack-o'-lanterns.
Because people were cutting their fingers off trying to carve a turnip. How do you carve a turnip? I don't have an answer.
It's too small. It's too small. What's with jack-o'-lanterns' poor dental hygiene? Can't they ever just have a nice set of teeth? They've got other problems, but why always the one tooth here, the one tooth there, a little half tooth going on?
Because you want the light to shine through, and if they had a full set of teeth, it wouldn't be lit up by the mouth.
I just don't know why they couldn't, as children, they couldn't pay better attention and have a good set of teeth. That's very upsetting to me.
Maybe it's a kid who just grew a couple teeth.
Maybe
it's based on a child.
Maybe.
How old was Jack-o'-lantern?
It doesn't say his age, just that he was a horrible man and a drunkard. They allude to him having a problem with the bottle. How many billions of pounds of pumpkins are produced in the U.S. each year, Wendy? If you know this,
I have no idea.
We don't have any prizes. 1.5 billion pounds of pumpkins are produced. My wife has purchased half of those for our lawn.
I have to tell you, and I told you this yesterday off the air, this is maybe the second, maybe third year we haven't carved a pumpkin, and it's been joyous and glorious.
So much better without it, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Because the kids get older, and I have fake pumpkins now.
Is that something you want to talk about on the air?
Yes. It's just easy. Our squirrels always destroy the pumpkins.
Yeah, squirrels go nuts for pumpkins.
Which I know they're eating them, but I don't want them up on my porch, so I just put fake pumpkins. And sometimes on windy days, the fake pumpkins roll down the street.
Yes.
It's a little game.
It's a fun game to play.
Suburban bowling.
That is a fun game to play.
Yes.
Do you know about Mischief Night?
I live it.
Depending on the region that you live in, you may know that the night before Halloween is also known as Mischief Night. Don't think it's in Detroit, but they call it is it called Devil Night or Hell Night or something
like
that?
Yeah.
Right. It's also in some places referred to as Doorbell Night. This is when local kids prank the neighborhood with toilet paper and ring doorbells and run.
God, I hate kids.
Why does that game still exist? Haven't we advanced since then? I mean, when we were kids, we didn't have computers, so all you could do for fun was ring your neighbor's doorbell and hide. That was it.
And then prank phone calls kicked in.
Prank phone calls are also good.
And now, when caller ID came out, you couldn't do that
anymore. Everything. Did you call it Ding Dong Ditch or did you call it Ring and Run?
Ding Dong Ditch.
I think we went back and forth.
I never heard the Ring and Run.
Oh, you didn't?
Dine and Dash. At restaurants.
Dine and Dash.
I never did that.
No, we never.
But I heard of people doing that.
We taught our friend Scott how to play Ding Dong Ditch, and he was awful at it. And what he would do is we would the game is simple for those of you who haven't played it. You ring somebody's doorbell and you run. Those are the only two rules to Ring and Run or Ding Dong Ditch. That's it. Scott got the first one right. He would ring the doorbell and then he would wait. And we'd go, no, then you run. But he would just stand there and get caught all the time.
You're a bully. You made him do that.
We suggested that he do it. Is that bullying? I'm a suggestive bully. We didn't say you can't hang with us, but we'd say if you want to be good at this, you must ring and then run with no time in the middle. There's no pause in Ring and Run. Scott would just stand there for a while. No, it's cooler if you wait. No, it's not. You'll get caught.
I was worse than, what was his name?
Scott.
I was worse than Scott. I might have done it maybe twice, but I remember one time I did it and I went back and apologized and said it was me.
There's no apologies in Ring and Run.
I just felt guilty. What if it was, you know, an elderly person who it took forever to get to the door? I started thinking of my own grandma and I felt really bad and I
went back
to the house, rang the doorbell again. She hesitated to answer it because she thought it was going to happen again. And I said, I'm really very sorry. That was me.
I will never forget, there was one night we did Ding Dong Ditch or Ring and Run on the Zub family who lived near us. And the guy was a bruiser. Mr. Zub was like a big, hefty, like an almost Lou Ferrigno looking guy. Always wore the white T-shirt with the white straps. Always. Always.
The tank top.
Even in dressy occasions, that's what he wore.
Well, he'd wear a nice button down over it. That was your undershirt.
He just wore the undershirt. Even at weddings and stuff and baptisms, he would just wear that. So we did, because he was the one, that was the prize, if you could do it on the Zub family, because Mr. Zub would unscrew your head if he caught you. So we did it on him, and I'll never forget, we were, my neighbor Bob lived across the street from the Zubs, we were hiding in his backyard, but doing that thing that the little rascals used to do, where we would all look around the corner, right. There were like three or four of us, with one head, then a head on top, then a head on top. So we're looking, and Mr. Zub comes out, and he just keeps walking slowly down his walkway and driveway.
Heading towards you guys?
Heading just toward the middle of the street as if to say to the neighborhood, this is not going to play. And he said these words, are you guys having fun? Like as deep and menacing as possible. And we all looked at each other like, no, this is not fun. When we did this to other families, this was fun. But when you did it to him, this is not fun.
Did you stop after that?
No, but every time I ever saw Mr. Zub, I was sure that he knew that I was an accomplice to this. I don't know how he could have known, but every time in the future when I would see him, I'd go, oh, he's still thinking about that day we played Ding Dong Ditch on him 11 years ago.
Should have apologized.
I should have apologized. I've learned my lesson. Sorry, Mr. Zub. We'll take a quick break and we'll close things off. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, well, it's a great costume you have on today, Bill.
I'm a guy who's still deciding his costume. I'm just a guy thinking about what he's going to be.
I'm a girl who has no fun. On Halloween.
Isn't that the saddest?
But Jasmine looks great in her bee costume.
She's a bee.
Thank you, guys.
She's the queen bee.
Yes, she is. That's it for our Halloween show. Tomorrow, the November 1st show, Wendy.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope we scared you. Do we? I hope we did.
I don't want to scare people.
We don't want to scare you, but if we did, it's a bonus for everybody. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.